This episode of Current Geek is brought to you by Casper, a sleep brand that continues to revolutionize its line of products to create an exceptionally comfortable sleep experience, one night at a time. Get $50 off select mattresses by visiting casper.com/geek and use the promo code GEEK at checkout.
Now that sign says applesauce. No. I'm kidding. It says applause. Ray, do me a favor. Could you flick that once? All right. Now, remember, you're all a big part of the show, so the better you are, the better Larry is. Okay, now you see this gentleman? Now he's giving me this sign, and it says, we're on in 10 seconds, so get ready to have a good time.
I have
Current Geek! Current Geek!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Current Geek, and this is the autopilot edition of the show. A chance for us to go back and watch the pilot of something old, classy, geeky, whatever, like a TV show. How about that? Talk about how it differed from the series it became and what we remember about the series in general. I'm Scott Johnson. He's Tom Merritt. And this week, we're talking about The Larry Sanders Show.
Oh, Inception. Yeah. I do love a good show with a self-referential theme, like a Moonlighting or it's Gary Shandling's show, which preceded the Larry Sanders Show. And I'm a big fan of talk shows. I was huge. And I kind of feel like Gary Shandling and David Letterman are sort of a class of a type of talk show host/comedian of that era.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And I always, I was a little slow to come around on Gary Shandling as far as, I don't know, his style and stuff. My only experience or exposure to him previous to all of this was he would occasionally guest on The Tonight Show. And
a lot of people thought he would take over for Carson eventually, you know, and then people thought Letterman would. And it turned out Jay Leno did. Mm-hmm. That's weird.
Those were kind of your three, though, right? Joan Rivers for a while, too. She was kind of in the running.
Yeah, right.
And then she kind of pissed off Johnny because she did that Fox thing. And that went away. It's a really great documentary in that I can never remember the name of, but something worth looking at. But Gary Shandling, easily one of the most influential comedians from that era, for sure. And when he started getting his own shows, people got real excited. In later years, we saw him in some movies, most recently some Marvel stuff. Sadly, passed away recently.
And you know, I mean, he wasn't super young, but I think we all would... Those of us who appreciated Gary Shandling would have liked to have many more years of
Gary. Yeah, I think he was in his 60s, early 60s.
66.
66, yeah. Not too bad.
So, I mean...
A little early.
These days, that's somewhat young.
Yeah. I mean, it's well below the average, which is a bummer. Mm-hmm. Because he'd be fun to have around still. There's a really good Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee episode with Jerry Seinfeld right near his death where he got a chance to have him on the show, and he was hilarious, as you might expect. And it's a real bummer he's not around anymore, but thankfully, Tom, we have the long-running, critically acclaimed, highly influential show that ended up on HBO called the Larry Sanders Show. I almost said the Gary Shandling Show, not to be confused with the three-camera laugh track Gary Shandling Show that aired on Fox, which, by the way, had one of the
Showtime.
Or was it Showtime? Showtime, you're right.
Yeah.
And it had this great intro song that I'm just going to play real quick. So this has nothing to do with the show we're reviewing, but
it has to do with the star of the show.
There you go. It's a taste of what it was before. Here you go. And it's not playing. Why? Oh, this side is muted. All right.
Because we
don't
have the rights.
And
here we go.
That's right. I read. What is that so startling? I happen to.
He's making a face.
I happen to
the
think
camera.
There's a lot.
This is the theme to Gary Show. The theme to Gary Show. Gary called me up and asked if I would write his theme song.
So pretty classic, pretty great. Just the guy singing about Gary Shandling. Anyway. He would then go on to do
this
HBO show.
It was sung by Bill Lynch, and the song's lyrics are self-referential, explaining how the song came to be. Gary Shandling's show was a sitcom in which the star, Gary Shandling, played by Gary Shandling, was aware that he was starring in a sitcom and would talk to the audience about it. In some ways, I feel like it's Gary Shandling's show way more groundbreaking than the Larry Sanders Show. But without it's Gary Shandling's show, I'm not sure you get the Larry Sanders Show. And the Larry Sanders Show was huge.
Yeah, it was a big deal. And it was a big deal in a couple of ways. that we'll get into probably in this episode, but the overall impact in my mind is there weren't a lot of TV shows like this. First of all, it's a show set within a show, kind of.
Right.
That's unusual and different.
I can't remember what the timeline is, but, you know, we do eventually get talk radio and Sports Night and that sort of thing. But I feel like it's because of the Larry Sanders Show that those happen and become popular.
Yeah, this feels like groundbreaking stuff for those shows and shows that would eventually come out, like 30 Rock. 30 Rock is a hugely influential modern comedy. It's not on anymore, but I think it owes a lot to what this did. Now, a lot of the stuff today is a little more frenetic and the editing's different and there's music that plays a part. This is a little more of a deadpan, almost Curb Your Enthusiasm sort of approach to the material. A lot of
and
what
you
people
see
are
way more of the show. The 30 Rock, I don't know that you ever really see the show. Like, there are plenty of episodes where you don't even see the stage.
Yeah, once
but
in a while.
Larry Sanders Show, the show itself is a big element of the show.
Did it ever annoy you? I mean, it's in the pilot, so we can speak to it in the pilot context as well.
Yeah.
Did it ever annoy you that they made an actual talk show for the scenes? And those talk show moments were very reminiscent of when he would host The Tonight Show, but also just kind of his sense of humor.
Oh, sure.
Letterman-esque sort of approach to it. And he would get out there and do these bits and these things. And there's an audience, and he'd have real guests on, real stars that would come on the show. And it kind of used to bug me that that also didn't exist independently, so I could have that also, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it doesn't bug me now, I think, because we've had so many shows like this that I'm just more used to, like, well, of course we don't see that, you know, that's not really a show. But back then, and knowing what you just said, I'm like, yeah, but can I also see just the show? Like, you know, I almost, it's not that I didn't like it, but when they would leave the set of the talk show, I'd be like, oh man, when are we gonna get back to the talk
like
show?
Real life started.
I didn't feel like
in.
That watching it this time. And plus, there's a lot of things they did that weren't shot, like Harrison Ford doing impressions. That wasn't a real thing. Harrison Ford was never on this show. They were able to make it feel like they were booking big stars for Larry Sanders Show because they didn't have to show you that.
Yeah, and then later they would have people come on.
Well, they had Robert Hayes on this one.
Sure.
You know, so they mix and match. They will have actual stars on for segments, which is fun, but they can say they have more than they'll actually show.
Right. And I like that. I think that's a fun way to skirt around that. And I have a good time with that.
I missed seeing Jody Watley. I would have liked to have seen Jody Watley.
Oh, yeah. Jody Watley would have been all right. Also, that Harrison Ford bit was pretty good. But also the guy from Airplane, what's his name again? You just said his name.
Robert Hayes
had a really good joke about how he was in Airplane too, and it made me laugh. So it's got this great subversive thing going on where there's no laugh track outside of when he's on stage. And that's not a laugh track. It's an audience responding. And so that feels very genuine and real. And then in very, I don't know, a thousand other shows, like Veep is what it reminds me of. For some reason, I'm coming away with a total Veep vibe here, which is also.
Well, I think some of it was improv. I'm pretty sure some of it was improv. And you could sort of tell that there's like audience reactions that they didn't exactly anticipate when they, you know, so they say, are you ready to hear about the garden? Yes, we are. They kind of laugh like, oh, we didn't really expect that kind of audience reaction. So Veep, I think, did some improv where they're like, okay, just get from here to there, however you go.
Yeah. And it's very apparent in something like Curb Your Enthusiasm, but HBO kind of broke ground, I think, with Larry Sanders. And then they themselves grew, I think, a number of shows that have the heritage, and they continue today, and they're still really strong. And I think shows like Arrested Development and Modern Family and these shows that are non-laugh track, not, you know, more of a single camera filmed experience, really, really work. In fact, it's much more rare to have a hit comedy that's a three camera typical sitcom. You have your occasional thing like two men and a, what was it called? Three dudes and a kid or whatever that thing was called, whatever it was. But then you have like,
I want to say three men in a boat, but that's not it either.
It's not it, whatever it was. But then
Third Eye Blind and a baby.
There it is. Nailed it. Ted Danson is in that. No. But like the other, who's the other show that he also produces? Oh,
Two and a Half Men.
Two and a Half Men. Thank you very much. And Big Bang Theory is another example. So you've got that is, you know, that model still exists. It's not like it's gone away completely, but it has greatly diminished. And I think it is in the wake of this as an innovation in comedy, and I think this is usually the choice of pilots going forward. You don't hear a lot of new laugh track, multiple camera stuff. You have the Roseanne reboot, which is a whole different issue. New Girl is it? Well, see, but New Girl has no audience. That's the same kind of deal.
Oh, no laugh track. You're right.
Yeah. So again, New Girl, I mean, maybe not overtly taking a page out of the Larry Sanders book, but it's clearly legacy.
MASH had no laugh track. It did.
MASH had a laugh track, much to the producers of
Special
chagrin.
Episodes that did.
Yeah. And they hated that, apparently. And they never wanted it, but the studio was like, well, how will people know when to laugh if you don't give them a laugh track?
Yeah, I can't possibly. And then Larry Sanders came along and said, like this.
Yeah. The reason I'm even saying all this, it feels like it's obvious stuff. Somebody somewhere is going to write in or tell us now in the chat room or something that, oh, Scott, you forgot about.
Oh, yeah. No, we're not saying Larry Sanders' show was the first television show ever not to have a laugh track when it was funny. Mm-hmm. That's not what we're saying at all. But it's sort of, it's not about being first. It's about being the one that suddenly starts the trend.
Yeah. And really took off. Because, dude, when our parents were kids, nobody trusted anyone to laugh on their own. They gave the Flintstones
a laugh
track.
If it was a comedy,
it
had a laugh track. Yeah. The way you knew it wasn't a comedy was it didn't have a laugh track.
Yeah. And if it was a cartoon, it had a laugh track. You couldn't watch the Flintstones and not have a laugh track. You had a laugh track in Scooby-Doo in the early 70s. Like, nobody's watching a live cartoon and laughing. How dumb did they think we were? I mean, I probably bought into it when I was a kid.
The Simpsons had no laugh track.
Ooh, see, there's maybe your...
Actually, The Simpsons is a good counterpoint to Larry Sanders. But it was animated, so I think, Larry Sanders still gets some cred.
Different tracks, similar innovation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Dinosaurs on ABC had no laugh track.
I thought that had a laugh track. I thought it did. Oh, well. What do I know? I watched one episode of that.
And Beavis and Butthead had no laugh track.
That's true.
But Larry Sanders Show, the most popular, minus The Simpsons, the most popular live action show.
There you go.
Because we haven't mentioned the vital statistics. It premiered on HBO August 15th, 1992. And I think that's important because you can still watch this on HBO Go, HBO Now. Most of the stuff HBO did in the 90s, they didn't retain the rights to. You can't see Fraggle Rock and such. So it's interesting that this was wholly owned, or at least they kept the rights to it.
Yeah, it took them a while to get it onto the streaming services, though. In fact, it was, I want to say this year, maybe the end of last year, whenever it was, but I remember there was an announcement, and somebody said, hey, HBO got all of the Larry Sanders Show up on HBO.
They got it back, okay.
Or got so it back, was that what it was?
The rights.
Okay.
So
that's great news, because, man, wherever you can get it. It's the funniest freaking thing, and I felt at the end of this is I wanted to keep going. I wanted to keep watching, Tom.
I didn't find this episode as funny as I remembered this show being.
Mm, well,
and I feel like it's because it's dated.
Ah, okay. Let's see where this goes. This is interesting because I found a bunch of it funny, but I know what you're saying. And I wonder, if we jumped ahead to a late season.
I should try this to be sure, but yes, I think if I went forward a few seasons, I'd be laughing again.
Yeah,
but it's partly a pilot. We know this about pilots at this point, is they aren't usually as good as the show is going to end up being, because they're still finding their way,
right?
And there's funny stuff, but the funny stuff is all like, yeah, heard that joke a million times, yep, seen that situation, oh, the network executive that wants the sponsorship and the talent that it's like been done a million times. The genius of Larry Sanders, how they treated that was new, but it's not new anymore.
Mm.
Right. So the idea that, we would see the garden weasel thing and we'd see the behind the scenes, that was all like, oh, wow, this is really interesting. We never see behind the scenes at a talk show. Right. Like it's a new innovative look at a story. But of course, how many times have you seen this on Sports Night, Talk Radio, 30 Rock, list goes on. Like, even Lou Grant, Mary Tyler Moore had similar kinds of situations, just not as much pretense to reality as Larry Sanders.
Sure, and less cameras following people around and mm-hmm. having it be shot more like a film.
Plus, jokes about Bill Clinton playing the sax.
Those
they
hold
land
up.
Differently now.
They land very differently now. Yeah, it's funny because 92 doesn't seem that long ago to me. But that's a long time. That's a real long time.
It was funny to me that the Bill Clinton playing the sax was like, oh, that was of a time. Mm-hmm. And the Jerry Brown buying Coke was like, oh, wow, you could say that about the current sitting governor of California? It's like, did, you know, like, who would have thought if you would have told me when that aired in 1992 that the Jerry Brown joke would feel more current and controversial than the Bill Clinton joke in 2018? I would not have believed you.
I did write that down in my notes that it, the monologue comedy was such a thing of its time.
Oh yeah.
And it really made me feel old. Like, I can't believe that was 92. That just seems crazy to me.
Maybe that's part of it too, is that monologue felt like a send up of monologues in 1992. It's like, oh yes, this is what I have seen tonight on Leno, Arsenio Hall, Letterman, etc. Right. Mm-hmm. Whereas, wait, was Leno around yet?
Leno was 90. No, it was around the same time, 92, 93. It's about the same time as Letterman.
But anyway, you know, it becomes like, oh, he's sending those guys up and doing a great job. Today in 2018, it's like, oh, a classic monologue. Like, it just felt like, yeah, that's what monologues were like back then.
Yeah. I kind of want to see later ones just to see if it veered away from current events. And I don't think it did. I think they always kind of stuck to that when they would show the monologue bit. Mm-hmm. And it would always be about things that were kind of happening back in 92, 93. So I won't get my hopes up too much that it's a little more evergreen. But part of it for me is that it's 4:3. And I don't know if the original cut was probably not in 4:3, but sometimes that stuff gets lost or whatever. Like,
why wouldn't it have been?
Well, the Seinfeld run is, they have that all in 16:9 on Hulu. But it only aired in 4:3. MASH, same thing. Only aired in 4:3. They have it in 16:9. So
I thought most stuff was shot. I mean, the reason I say this is silly because I did not work in TV sitcoms, and so maybe they were shooting 16:9 for safety or options or whatever. But everything we shot at CNET up until HD came around was 4:3. And we had to shoot 4:3 safe when we shifted to 16:9, but we just shot in 4:3. All the local TV news stuff I ever did was shot in 4:3, but that was interesting. I didn't realize that they still shot 16:9 even before HD was a glimmer.
I think if it was film, because in the case of Seinfeld,
it was just 16:9 because.
And it got cropped.
All right.
Like,
that makes sense.
I think that's how that worked. I'm not 100%. I am no expert either, but Seinfeld was film. Larry Sanders was film. Tech TV stuff was, I'm thinking, video, right?
Oh, yeah. No, it was DVC Pro, actually.
Which is pretty cool. Pretty cool in its own right. But I think that's what was going on. So I've been happy to see that. Like, Star Trek Next Generation is all in 16:9 on Netflix, which is awesome. But I only ever saw it in 4:3. This feels like it should be in
Star Trek, the original series is all 4:3.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, there's nothing they can do about it. Okay. Cool.
I think, anyway. You know what? Now that I think about it, that remaster thing, I don't know if they did anything to it, if they took something.
When they remastered the original series, they did a weird thing where they put some effect shots in 16:9, but the rest of the show is 4:3 because that's all they shot.
Yeah, which is crazy because the effect shots are pretty cool in that they kind of match the time. They look like they're okay, but having it jump aspect ratios is weird.
Yeah.
I don't like it, but it
improves the look.
Yeah.
I mean, they look still of their time, but better than they did.
This is true.
Higher resolution.
Now, they did pretty well. First season, like you mentioned, premiered in August. The season was nominated for 8 Emmy Awards. So did real good out of the gate. After changes to the eligibility rules in 88, Larry Sanders Show became the first cable TV series to be nominated for an Emmy Award for Outstanding Comedy Series. It lost to Seinfeld, but still a big deal. And also maybe a sign of what's to come for the world of television awards, because soon it would be all cable, and now it's all streaming.
It wasn't till the 2000s that anyone else besides HBO broke through there, and then suddenly, in the last 5 years, we got Netflix and Amazon getting nominated. It's crazy.
AMC did real well a few years ago.
Changed so fast.
AMC, FX, who else wins awards a lot? That might be everybody.
That's about it. Cable did not break through into the Emmys for the longest time.
Yeah. And it's almost like
only HBO.
It's like when it finally did, streaming services went, oh, hi, how's it going?
Yeah, the streaming services were right on their tail.
Yeah. I guess a lot of this, it's the, they're just poaching the same talent in a lot of ways, so it's probably not that crazy. But anyway, it's crazy how far we've come since 1992. It's weird to see what's his name in here, whose name just left me. Where's the cast
Jeffrey
list?
Tambor?
Jeffrey Tambor, where he looks so much younger than he does in Arrested Development. It's kind of throwing me for a loop. I realized
it was about 10 years younger.
It was a long time ago, but I don't know why. I thought because I had just seen the season 4 remix or remaster or whatever they're calling it of Arrested Development, where we went and recut it.
Oh,
really,
yeah,
really good, by the way, like way better than it was before.
I mean, I haven't tried that out yet.
It's
need to do that.
Odd how well it worked. It bugs me a little bit. Like, why couldn't they have done that in the first place? But whatever. And also, that's all it takes is editing. That also kind of bugs me, but it's better. It's genuinely better. You'd have to see it and you tell me, but I think it was better. Anyway, I had just watched that. So it was a little jarring to go back to, you know, young Jeffrey Tambor. That's all.
Well, I mean, this whole cast is insane. You've got Gary Shandling, obviously, Tambor, Rip Torn, also looking rather young as far as Rip Torn goes. Mm-hmm. Penny Johnson-Gerald, who plays Beverly, is in now I'm blanking on.
Oh, Megan Gallagher.
Penny Johnson-Gerald is in the new space TV show on Fox.
Oh, the Orville, the Orville.
Orville, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's in that. Janine Garofalo is in this. Her star is going to go up and then come right back down again before we get to today.
Yeah. You got Jeremy Piven in there, although I think that
Jeremy Piven credited in this episode, and I got excited. Yeah. And then, of course, he doesn't show up until episode 2.
Yeah, what happened? Maybe something got cut because he is shown as in the credits for the pilot.
Or they used to just credit the cast for a season on every episode, whether they showed up or not.
Mm-hmm.
Might have been that.
Yeah. Let's see here. It was one of the things I was going to point to in the cast, and now I lost it. I don't remember what it was. I do like Rip Torn a lot, though. Ooh, Rip Torn. Yeah, he's 87 now.
Yeah.
You and I can watch some old black and white thing, and I don't even think about time. It's just like, man, yeah, that was back in the 40s, 50s, whatever. Here we are now.
You think about how everybody's dead.
you don't think about time.
You're just like, oh, all these people are ghosts.
But now when I think of 90, I shouldn't feel that way about 92. That's 5 minutes ago in my life. So this has been interesting for me, to be honest, like watching
this.
It
feels old to me in a way that is hard for me to wrap my head around. I mean, maybe it's because, I don't know. I don't want to try to compare lives, but I was a lot different at age 22 than I am now. So when this was out, I was too busy in college to really watch it. I caught a couple of episodes here and there, and I really liked Gary Shandling. I wanted to watch it more. I just didn't have time.
Yeah.
I was a little snotty senior graduating University of Illinois, being in TV journalism.
Yeah, you were
blah,
fancy.
Blah, blah, blah. Headed off to an internship at National Public Radio, covering the Clinton election, all that stuff.
You were doing cool stuff, man. I was trying to get newspapers to print my comics. I was a mess in 22. I thought I was going to be the next great American cartoonist, and that didn't really work out.
And so, you know what I'm saying? Like, you're like, wow, I'm much different than I was then. The internet was a thing that I got to use in classrooms, not at home.
Yeah. No, I get that.
And so in some ways you watch Larry Sanders' Show and you think, oh, it's not that much different, but then it's old. It's ancient.
Yeah.
It's before people in their 20s were born.
Yeah. No, you're not wrong.
Some people.
If you look at when we were 22 and you went back 22 years from that, which is about how far we are away from 92, we're more than that, actually. Mm-hmm. What are we?
Yeah.
It's 24?
26 years from 92.
Jeez Louises. So 26 years ago, away from when this started, you know, it's like laughing and stuff. Like,
yeah, well, it's black and white television.
God, that's just mind-numbingly weird to me.
The black and white analog here, I guess, is, it's not high def and it's in 4:3.
Right. Yeah, that's a very strange thing to think of. All right. I wanted to at least bring up this. His portrayal in the show often just feels like, hey, this is probably what Gary Shandling's like. He's a little nervous. You know, he doesn't like his having Rip Torn not there when there's something important happening.
I thought one of the best scenes in this episode was when she comes up and starts yelling at him in the middle of the stage after the show.
Yeah.
And he kind of turtles, you know, like he withdraws, like, Arthur, where's Arthur?
Yeah.
And then when he realizes Arthur isn't there, he sort of unfolds again, like, okay, I have to face up, and says, not here, you know, and is kind of forceful for him, and then starts to give her a piece of his mind, and then, you know, it all kind of devolves until they make the joke about her punching him in the face. There's some other stuff in here that's the way they handled the gender issue with the female executive.
Yeah.
It's not as dated as it could have been going back to 1992, but it's a sense, not an overt thing, but I feel like they're more proud of how they're treating it than we would be today.
Yeah, it's early stuff. Like, mm-hmm. it's
they're like, look, yeah. It's a powerful executive. She punches him. Get it? Female empowerment. And mm-hmm. It's like, well, no, just a female who loses her temper and punches somebody is not a good example of female empowerment.
No, but then that probably felt groundbreaking or at least like they're
the
attempting.
Time, right?
Sure,
yeah.
Sure. 92.
And it was treated as a joke. Like, okay, you know,
yeah.
Gary can't stand up.
Okay, popping in with a quick break. Quick break, you guys. I want to talk to you about Casper, a sleep experience brand. Continues to revolutionize its line of products to create an exceptionally comfortable sleep experience one night at a time. Maybe you want to watch the Larry Sanders Show while you're laying on your bed. It'd be all right. Casper mattresses are designed by humans for humans. The original Casper mattress combines multiple supportive memory foams for a sleep experience that is just the right sink and just the right bounce. Casper's breathable design helps you sleep cool and regulate your body temperature throughout the night. They are not just any old mattress company. They offer a wide array of products to ensure an overall better sleep experience. And Casper mattresses are made right here in the USA. Buying it is easy. You order online, delivered right to your door in a compact box, free shipping, and free returns to the U.S. and Canada. And you get a You get a risk-free 100-day trial. There's no frisking, I promise. Risk-free 100-day free trial. Considering we spend like a third of our lives on a mattress, it's pretty important that you truly sleep on one before committing. That's why Casper gives you 100 nights to try it out. I love mine. I sleep on it every night. I sleep well on it, which is the important thing. And you will too. Get $50 towards select mattresses by visiting Casper.com/geek and using the promo code geek at checkout.
I did like a Rip Torn kept saying, I'm pretty sure I killed her in Vietnam, or no, killed her in the Korean War.
Well, that verges on being unacceptable too, you know?
It made me laugh.
And it was at a time when characters of that age could have conceivably fought in Korea. No, nobody, like the only people who fought in Korea are in their 70s now, or in the 70s, 80s.
80s, probably. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it feels like all of these things are freaking me out on time. Actually, speaking of Rip Torn, there's a great line while he's in the hallway. Gary Shandling does not want to go to the executive meeting, and this little exchange occurs, and it cracked me up, so I'm going to play it here.
I can't go. I'm not just saying this, Artie. I got a pain.
Fine. You just go home. I'll come over there later, stick a red-hot poker up your ass, and we'll call it even.
Okay.
And that's another one that's an example of its time, because they said that on TV. Yeah. It must be HBO, right? Yeah, you know, it's the 1992 equivalent of everyone in Game of Thrones being naked.
Yeah, no, exactly. Or like we were watching Veep, and man, Veep has got a mouth on it, right? Like just the sweariest thing on TV. And it's part of what makes it funny if you're into that kind of humor. But it's off the charts. And you just go, oh, well, yeah, and, you know, of course it's on HBO, but you don't really think too much about it. You go back and watch this, and through the entire episode, there's like one ass and one F-bomb.
Yeah.
And you find yourself going back to 92 going, oh, this was where all the adults went to get their TV.
They said the F-word on HBO.
Gary Shandling swore. What?
Yeah.
Can't do that on the Tonight Show, so.
Yeah. But trust me, I know there's some people out there like, well, why do you have to swear? And I get that. But there are, it's a way people actually talk in real life.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're trying to do what Larry Sanders Show was doing and capture, like, this is the reality when we go off stage, right? This is what happens backstage. You probably are, they're toning it down quite a bit from what it would actually be.
Yeah, you've heard the Casey Kasem outtake audio that he probably
I've
didn't.
I've just worked backstage at TV shows.
Yeah, you know, man, you know exactly, right?
People just talk. They don't even have to be Casey Kasem. They don't have to go that extreme. People are just like, man, I'm effing tired or whatever, right? You know, right. Like it just, it's the way people talk sometimes.
Yeah, we're like, you know, we both run pretty, you know, clean tag type podcasts, mm-hmm. but there are days where you're just like, you know, letting loose, and it's hard sometimes to keep it in the PG and the 13 and sometimes in the R if you're not careful. But back then, that just seemed, I don't know, that seemed like, ooh, that's why you get HBO, because they don't
hold
back.
First novel I ever wrote, I gave to my dad to read, and he's like, I liked it. It's a great story. He's like, I don't see why you had to have the characters curse like that. And I'm like, because they're real people. They're based on real people, and those people talk like that.
You sound like my mom. My mom would say the same thing. She goes, I listen to your morning show, but sometimes you drop the S word. I'm like, yeah, I do.
You're like, sanitation?
Yeah.
Surprise? Seriously? Which one?
Sour milk? What are we talking about? None of those and more. Anyway, where were we?
Stinking?
This thing ran for how long? A year? No.
1998.
I didn't mean year. I was going to say
all
10 years.
All the way to 1998. So yeah, 6 years. Yeah. It's interesting. It's Gary Shandling's show on his Showtime ran for 4 years.
Yeah.
And then the Larry Sanders Show was kind of seen as, he's getting another chance. And it ran for 6 years.
So let's see. Six total seasons. Yeah. End of the same year as Seinfeld. And always felt like those two were head to head in terms of, you know, who was making the best sitcom on TV and
the problem that Gary Shandling had being on HBO at that time, mm-hmm. especially, was I couldn't watch it. I didn't have HBO. I couldn't afford HBO.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, it just wasn't a thing that I felt I needed to afford just to watch movies and the Larry Sanders Show.
I keep mixing.
So most of my friends also did not have HBO. HBO was something people richer than us had.
Yeah.
So we didn't watch it, even though but like I said, I would catch an episode here and there when I'd be maybe at somebody's house or whatever, but it just wasn't something that was accessible. You know, and same goes today. HBO Now is $15 a month. It's not cheap,
right?
But it's cheaper than it was back then. And you can, you know, have it for a month and then cancel it, stuff like that, the ways you couldn't. But I did not get to see all six seasons. I certainly haven't seen all the episodes.
No, I'm going to, that's why I'm going to go through them, I think. I think I'm going to.
You always do this. You get sucked in.
I do, and I end up doing it. Like, I watched all of Breaking Bad again.
I think
again.
It's great.
Like, Breaking Bad, I thought I was done with a single watch through. I didn't, like, it's the kind of show I'm just never going to watch twice, and I loved my
second
viewing.
I'm jealous that you do that. I'm like, man, I wish I
Oh, but I stayed
that.
Up so many late nights because I couldn't do it in the day, so it was like, all right, well, what time is it? 11? I can get two in, like. It's just the way it would go.
Yeah.
One of the things I liked about the show was its constant parade of special guests. I'm going to give you just not everybody, because there's a billion names, but I'm going to tell you some of the guests that came and sat in the chair and would not only play up the sort of talk show part of it, but they would hang around the offices and do other things throughout the show. So, for example, speaking of Seinfeld, Jason Alexander, Tim Allen was there, Jennifer Aniston, Tom Arnold. I mean, these sound like some 90s ass names if I'm reading these right. Alec Baldwin, Daniel Baldwin, Roseanne Barr, Drew Barrymore, Beck, you know, the performer Beck.
Oh, yeah.
Ed Begley Jr., Jim Belushi, the list goes on and on. Sandra Bernhardt, I haven't heard about her since the early 90s. Dr. Joyce Brothers, Jim Carrey, Drew Carey. Let's see, Elvis Costello, Courtney Cox. Pretty much the
You're
entire
just doing the C's now. Yeah, yeah, and it got far down the list.
And it's almost the entire cast of ER had been on at one point or another.
Biggest show on television in the 90s.
It was huge.
Sure.
ER was huge. Yeah. That's a show I've been thinking we should maybe do a pilot on sometime. Just
that, you know what? That's a great idea. I'll add that to the autopilot suggestion list.
Like way down the list, maybe, but whatever. But like,
maybe not next month, but it should be on the list.
It feels like anybody who was sort of somebody in the 1990s, early to mid 1990s, made it onto this show. And
I've rarely watched ER too.
Really? Dude, we were so.
Eileen was devoted to it before we met.
Yeah.
So she's watched most of it. I think maybe I've watched two or three episodes.
I mean, I got married August 1992, so
That seems crazy to even say that.
So that's all you did?
So we watched a lot of, it was Thursday. Hey, it was must-see TV. You'd watch Seinfeld and you'd catch, I think, Cheers for a while until it ended. And then you had this, or ER rather. We didn't have HBO though, so I hardly ever saw this other thing. So even in that case, I was going to tell you, when I was in high school, right toward the end of high school, 88, 87, whatever it was, cable was a thing, you know, MTV and everything, stuff and whatever. Sure. People had cable. We had all the stuff in the house run for cable, but nobody was paying for cable. We didn't have cable. There was no way for us to get cable that I knew of anyway. But one day, for no reason that I can tell you, except maybe my dad tapped into it and no one knew. I don't know. But suddenly we had cable one day. Mm-hmm. Flipped it on and it totally worked. And I don't know where it was coming from. Nobody seemed to know in the house, and they all said, well, just use it while we got it, I guess. And then one day, disappeared, went away. Still to this day, have no idea how that would have worked without a cable box and without paying for it.
Well, you didn't need a cable box to get all the channels. That happened to me in Austin, too, where we suddenly just started getting cable one day.
Really?
And the way they would turn it on would be they would just go out to a box that had a padlock on it, and they would screw the 30 ohm cable into the dock. I'm like, great. There you go. You've got cable now.
Really?
So yeah. So if you were able to get into that box, you could give yourself cable. When we got it in Austin out of nowhere, I never knew if my roommate secretly bought it and didn't want to tell me, cause he didn't want to make me feel bad about it, or if he had sneaked out into the box and hooked it up. But I know, I don't want to throw this person under the bus, but there was a relative, someone in the family, when I was in Greenville, went out to the padlock, copied down the serial number off the master lock, called master lock, said, hey, I lost the key to my master lock. Can you send me a replacement? Yeah. Yeah, here's the serial number. And they sent him a number. So he went, unlocked, gave himself cable.
You're kidding me. That's great. Oh, I love those stories.
I don't think Master Lock does it that way anymore. I'm not sure that little gambit would work, but it worked in 1987.
Plus, it's all, most cable access is so digitally.
Well, that's the other thing, right? You can hook up your cable. Let's say you hook up your cable like that way. It may be scrambled anyway. If it's digital cable, which most places are, you're going to need the box to decode it. Like, there's very little analog cable left for you to be able to try to get.
I don't know what that was. I still to this day kind of wonder if my brother or my dad
tapped into the neighbor
or something, put a splitter on there. Like, it was entirely possible that they did and nobody would tell me, but it's this family, like, not secret, but like legend that will never truly be known. Anyway, so this show had a total of 13 directors during its entire run.
That's not unusual. Most shows have multiple directors directing different episodes.
Yeah, and usually it's multiple. Yeah, that's almost every show these days, especially one like this. But Ken Kwapis is an interesting name because he directed most of the first season. So he's all over the first season, including this pilot.
Him and Todd Holland.
Yep. And contributed to the visual style of the show. He later went on to direct episodes of The Office, including that pilot as well. Feeling like that's The Office, good example. Now, I know there's the British Office, but they're influenced by, you know, TV of other places as well. And I feel like The Office has some debt to pay to the Larry Sanders Show. There's a similar kind of, you know, people aren't looking at the camera documentary style so much in the Larry Sanders Show, but there's still that kind of awkward hand.
It's the behind the scenes of the action.
Right? Yes, exactly. And then you had Todd Holland. He directed 51 episodes. You mentioned him. He spanned all six seasons, and then Shanling directed three episodes of the final season. And
Kwapis is working on the Santa Clarita Diet, the Netflix show. He did three episodes of that.
I have not seen that yet. People tell me to see it. Should I see it? It's like zombie girls.
Got
story.
Raylan from Justified in it.
I like him. I do, and I like what's her name from ET. Can't think of her name all of a sudden. Drew Barrymore. She's all right.
Drew Barrymore from ET.
I couldn't think
I'm
of
sure
another.
She doesn't absolutely hate it when people refer to her that way.
The girl from E.T. Well, I mean, what else are you going to do? The girl
from Todd Holland. Todd Holland did a few episodes of Felicity, did a bunch of episodes of Malcolm in the Middle.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, go on. The poor doomed Real O'Neills. He did 10 episodes of that. And a couple episodes of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Too. See, and that show's pretty good. But they all went on to other stuff is my point. 40 writers also. 40 writers over time. That's a great big writing team. I don't know how that compares to other shows, but that seems...
Well, and it's not 40 writers from day one, right? That's a writer's room revolving over six seasons. So, you know, people come and go.
You had people like, for example, Paul Sims, Judd Apatow wrote for the series.
Ah, yeah.
See, some other names I don't know, but they all went on to do
cutting
other cool
things. Teeth on the Larry Sanders Show.
That's right. And a lot of shows, like we said earlier, say, hey, you influenced us. I'll give you some who have actually outright said it. Here's the list. Sex and the City, also an HBO show. The Sopranos, that's weird. I don't know why The Sopranos would credit that.
Probably in the shooting style, you know, of the behind the scenes stuff, particularly on the Larry Sanders Show. Maybe they borrowed some of that style.
Now, some of the other ones are like obvious ones. 30 Rock, like I mentioned, My Life on the D-List, Showbiz Action, Studio 60 on Sunset Strip, which didn't last very long, but that was very reminiscent of that. Arrested Development, The Office, Curb Your Enthusiasm, and so on. Ricky Gervais said in Variety that he was heavily influenced by the show and quote, it taught me that a flawed character can be compulsive viewing, seeing them squirm and get their comeuppance. That's interesting. Just the kind of character Larry Sanders was, which on TV is this fun, self-effacing comic. And then behind the scenes, kind of a nervous, nebbish, getting himself in trouble kind of guy. I think that just is people, right? Like, that's who we are. So look at Tom, for example. He has the exterior and veneer of an always with it 100% professional guy. And you are.
Do I though?
Yes. I think you do. But then you got to have your moments where, I stepped in dog poo or whoops, do I really have to call the power guy? Like, you know what I mean? Like The show figured out a way to make that mundane stuff interesting.
No, there's the part where Tom's freaking out over the documents he has to sign for his new house and how he's afraid he's going to screw it up and then they won't get the house. You know, like that the capturing that kind of stuff is what you're talking about.
Yeah. Now, my favorite one, though, is Aaron Sorkin credits this show for inspiring his walk and talk style and scenes in The West Wing.
Oh, yeah, and they do that right here in the pilot episode totally that we watched, a couple of times.
Yeah, which is great. And to think about how, I mean, that's an Aaron Sorkin thing, like up and down.
That is, I mean, West Wing is iconic for that, right?
Yeah, and Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip was also his creation. And as you mentioned, Sports
and
Night.
And the Newsroom, they do it there.
Yeah, they definitely pull from that. I mean, he's obviously got a more serious bent to his stuff, but it's... If you think that it just went as far as, funny show in the 90s, I remember that. Like, it goes way longer than that and probably touches all sorts of entertainment. I don't want to overstate it, but it feels like one of the more...
It is consistently on, you know, when they're like, top 50 shows of all time, it's consistently on those lists.
Yeah. They have, listen to these awards, this is great. American Comedy Awards, 1999. Funniest male guest appearance on the show, David Duchovny. Sure, why not?
I mean, Duchovny can be really funny. We forget that because he played Mulder, but he's an actor.
Yeah.
He can act not funny if the role calls for it, but he was real funny in Twin Peaks.
Yeah, he was funny in that. Best female guest appearance was Ellen DeGeneres. This is before things really went crazy for her.
Yeah.
Again, she's from that same, maybe a little bit younger than those guys, but kind of from that same graduating class.
She got big in that same era.
Yeah. But anyway, won all kinds of stuff. BAFTA Awards, Directors Guild of America Awards. It's huge. Now, here we are in 2018. The only way you can watch this, I assume it's in, if you have regular HBO, it's probably, they rerun stuff like this. I don't know if they do.
Well, yeah, but you can log into HBO Go if you've got regular HBO.
That's just what you'd do, right? So that's what we're doing, or that's what I'm going to
do. And you can buy it. You can get it on DVD. You can get it digitally, buy the series.
Yeah. It's been so long. I'm totally going to watch all of it. So that on a future autopilot edition of Current Geek, I'll talk about what I thought of the full run. Not at length, but, you know, I'm into it. I really liked this. I'm glad you suggested it.
Just drop little hints like, well, that reminds me of episode 17 of the Larry Sanders Show.
Well, and it's a hard show. As far as pilots go, I don't know if length of pilot has too much effect on what you and I do, but this is a short, you know, it's 25 minute comedy.
Yeah.
And those can be tricky because, you know, there's only so much stuff happening in 25 minutes. So a lot of what we end up talking about in this particular case is, well, what was the effect on the series and how did it branch out?
Because the garden weasel thing was repetitive.
Yeah.
You know, it was just enough to fit into the show, but it was like, do the live ad. All right. I don't want to do the live ad. Okay. I'll try it. And I thought it was interesting that the first time he did it, he was funny and it worked.
Yeah.
But they, you know, they played the card of like, no jokes, Mr. Sanders, which I'm like, even then, I don't think the executives would have been upset with what he did. Mm. But they wanted to create that conflict. So they sort of ham-fistedly did it the way a sitcom back then would do. Then the second time he does it, he really, you know, he brings up, you know, horrible things. And then it's like, okay, yeah, that's not an acceptable read. Then the third time he brings Hank in and then that saves it. And I like how it doesn't end definitively. It ends with him saying, no, I'm not going to do it. She storms out. The president runs after her. And then he's like, well, maybe I will. Really? And then freeze frame. And we get no resolution on that.
I don't think it carries over as far as I know. I don't know. I got to watch that second episode, but the garden weasel, so we should just at least mention this. Garden weasel is an actual product. Like, that's a thing I would see commercials for growing up. So I know that thing existed as a thing I could go to Home Depot and purchase or buy online, or not online, through catalogs and stuff. And so even though this kind of meta thing where they're making this fake advertisement, there's a story around why that's hard to do in a comedy show and it'll do a live read. Like, I feel like I relate to that. I understand this from a podcasting perspective, like some of the stuff you're asked to read or, you know, whatever, doing ads and things, it can be a little weird. And so I really dug on all of that. But the thing I kept thinking about was, this must have been the best advertising Garden Weasel would ever get.
No, and that's why I think, you know, even at that time, those reads would not have been caused that much anger. That was very cartoonish because I'm fairly certain that was paid placement. HBO told Garden Weasel, look, he's going to say funny things about Jimmy Hoffa and then, you know, call it a rodent stick, but you're going to get so much exposure. And they're like, yeah, great. Love it.
Yeah.
Because that's the way it really goes. This is not realistic in that you have a board meeting. They're like, you're doing a garden weasel. Read the script.
Right.
Like, that's, I don't think even in 1992 that's the way they would have gone about it.
Right. But I just loved it. I just thought, oh, garden weasel. It's such a dumb thing. And now look at all this great advertising they get. It's like Snapple on Seinfeld, or, you know, I don't do that as much anymore. I feel like you don't get the,
oh, what? Product placement?
Well, you get product placement, but it's never as overt. It's never just,
no, they've
like,
gotten better at it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like more subtle and you don't think about it as much, or it's part of the scene, or
there have been some clumsy ones within the past 5 or 6 years where they're like, hey, is that a new Yaris? Why, it sure is. I love the way it handles. All right, let's go solve the crimes. Like, you know, you're like, okay, that was obviously product placement there.
Yaris.
Yeah.
You don't want to watch a hardcore cop procedural that has a Yaris in it, I'm thinking.
I feel like, I know that was taken from something real. I think it was Eureka where they did that.
Oh, that was, yeah. I missed that show. That was a good show. By the way, so a quick recommendation for Tom before we wrap things up. Wife went and saw the Meg today, the Megalodon thing.
Oh, yeah.
She loved it and thinks that you will love it because it's right up your alley.
Okay. Yeah. Seeing movies for me means either carving out 3 hours of my own time, which I have precious little of alone time to do, or going with Eileen.
Yeah.
Going with Eileen means seeing something Eileen wants to see. And she does. She is fascinated with the Meg.
Mm.
But this weekend, Crazy Rich Asians is out.
Oh, right.
Now, usually I'd be in good position because she went to a preview yesterday of Crazy Rich Asians and loved it. So that would normally mean like, oh, great. Well, we can go see the Meg. But she's like, I want to see it again. And it does sound good. So my Meg time might get taken up by Crazy Rich Asians. And then I'll either have to go see the Meg on my own or just wait till it comes to TV.
Sounds like you're going to love it. It's right up your disaster movie.
It looks perfect. Yeah. No, exactly.
That's what you want.
I mean, it's not exactly a disaster movie.
No.
But it's close enough.
Yeah, it's close enough.
It looks silly.
It's a disaster for some people, let's say that.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, you'll see Crazy Rich Asians. I will see Crazy Witch Raisins, which is a very different movie about possessed raisins.
Tell me more. Sounds great.
I don't want to spoil it. So
Crazy Witch. Now, are all the characters in it actually raisins?
Yeah. Yes. Well, there's one guy who's like, it's like a Muppet movie. There's one person who's real, but everything else is a Muppet.
Okay.
So all it's right. All raisins. One guy, all raisins.
But otherwise. You don't realize it till the end. You're like, wait a minute. All those characters were raisins.
Yeah, the whole time. It's going to be, I'm just saying, if we keep doing our top 200 movies of all time, one of these days.
Crazy Witch Raisins. will be on there.
Well, my
I think the Meg has a better chance of making it.
I think you're probably right. That'll be on FilmSack for sure. Yeah. Well, that's going to do it for the show. I had a really good time with this pilot. I mean, Tom's not wrong that it shows its age, but
I watched it twice. I didn't dislike it. It right. was enjoyable, but I remember laughing at Gary Shandling back in the 90s, mm-hmm. and I did not laugh out loud.
Yeah, I didn't either, but I have a feeling I got to keep going. Like, I didn't like season one, or at least the first few episodes of Curb Your Enthusiasm. That had to grow on me, and it did. And
yeah, sure.
And it got real
like
good.
A mold.
And now it's the best. It's like the best thing. Rick and Morty was rough first episode for me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I like Rick and Morty right out of the gate.
I couldn't glom on right away. I don't know what it was. I think I was just caught off guard or something. And then it became my favorite modern cartoon. So this may be one of those, and I'm just going to rip through it, and it's up there now. Someone put the work in, so I'm going to go watch it. And I'm paying $15 a month. Why not?
Yeah.
Or whatever sure. it is I'm paying. All right. Before we go, the film festival's back next week. Now, we missed a show last week. It was my fault. A bunch of stuff going on. My mom's birthday, among
them. Because of the family.
It's all over now. I mean, the family.
And so we're going to watch a movie about the family.
We've seen Godfather 1. We're going to see Godfather 2. And I haven't seen that either. So neither Godfathers had been seen by me before we did this. I've seen one now because of you. Now I'm going to see 2. And everyone tells me 2 is like the bomb. I'm so excited.
There are legitimate arguments to be had sitting around a drink with people about whether Godfather or Godfather Part 2 are better.
Yeah.
No one thinks 3 is worth
it. No, 3 is not great. Yeah. In fact, I think I've seen a bunch of 3, not all of 3.
Oh, that's just
and
sad.
that may have helped deter me, because I went, really? This is okay. Well, I'll get around to 1 and 2 eventually. I think that was very young, and that was a mistake.
That'll be fun to talk about, whether after seeing The Godfather for the first time recently, now seeing 2, which camp you end up finding yourself
in. Right. What a bummer 3 must be to everybody involved.
I know, right?
Oh, you know what that's like? It's like,
especially Sofia Coppola, because she's like, I'm a really good director. Stop bringing that up.
Yeah, quit bringing that piece of poo up. Go watch Lost in Translation again. Mm. She made that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, so that's next week right here and on Current Geek. If you want to be here live, we do it at 5 p.m. Mountain Time, 4 p.m. Pacific, right here at frogpants.tv. You're welcome to come in and be part of the chat room. They've all been in there yapping back and forth. It's always nice to see them. And our next month's episode of Autopilot will be MASH. Now, here's the fun bit. Tom is traveling back to Illinois to see some family. And on his way, he's going to spend a couple of days here in Salt Lake City. So we're going to make a day of it, a couple days of it.
Because I'm taking a Conestoga wagon back to Illinois.
Are you really? You're not really, are you?
No.
Okay.
But it made it sound like that. He's traveling to Illinois and on his way through Salt Lake. Yeah.
Don't forget to stop at the great Mount Rushmore.
I need to reprovision, so I'll be staying with Scott.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, so he's going to do this old-timey thing. He's going to come here. We're going to watch MASH. There's going to be a bonus for patrons. So we're going to do the MASH episode, which will be a normal episode, and then the patrons
we'll
are going to get a live watching of MASH episode 1, season 1, and that will be our autopilot for next month. Of course, between all that, we'll have some regular episodes as well, where we cover nerd news from the most recent
week. Our discussion episode.
A discussions episode. There you go.
Yeah.
So this is all coming up soon. Don't leave just yet, because Legal Geek.
Hey, sit down.
Sit down right now. Legal Geek is back, and he's talking about electronic scooters that have taken over the streets of many major cities. San Francisco, L.A. Tom, you probably see these everywhere, right? Everyone's trying to push these damn things.
I knocked one over on my run today.
Excellent work. Well done. You have done...
I didn't mean to. There were like 4 of them just blocking the sidewalk. And as I was trying to navigate past them with my dog, I knocked one over. I'm like,
we're going to end up with landfills or something just full of these freaking scooters.
Sarah Lane sees them like jumbled up outside her window every morning. They're just like piled.
That's not good. No. Anyway, he's got a big piece on that. So if you want to understand the legal issues behind having those things scattered all over the place, ride sharing with scooters, stick around for Legal Geek. Tom, before we go, anything you'd like to promote, push, or pimp?
Yes, please. Gallium is the real story of what happened when Maya the Salvager got fired from her dream job. And also found something really historically important to a mining company that doesn't want her to tell anyone. It's a fun novel. I've had some people say some nice things about it, and I would like all of you to review it on Amazon if you haven't read it. If you haven't read it, buy it and read it. I think you might like it. Reviews help other people discover the book, so please go to Amazon.com if you have purchased it. And I know many of you have. Thank you. And give it your honest review.
Yes.
It's tomsnewbook.com. We'll take you right there.
Tomsnewbook.com. There are a million things going on at frogpants.com, so go check it out. Currentgeek.com is our website. And don't forget, if you'd like to send us an email, you surely can. That email address is, currentgeek@gmail.com. And you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/currentgeek. For me, for Tom, and for all of you, we'll see you next time.